And another episode is upon us. It is time for the epic Sean Connery James Bond in-depth that we have been promising for a very, very long time. This will be a focused Sean Connery episode. Okay, so Roger Moore, Lazenby, Dalton, Craig. I don't even want to talk about Craig, but we will in a future episode. So they're all out. This is Sean Connery only. So let's kick it off with, it is October 5th, 1962. And we will be seeing Dr. No in the theater. Now, let's give a little rundown of the film, okay? So, Dr. No was released, like I said, October 5th, 1962, in the UK. It didn't hit our screens until much later. Yeah. But it was a hit. It was a big hit over in the UK. So, its budget was $1.1 million. Now, in 1962... that's kind of a lot of money. Not really, you know, big, you know, summer blockbuster kind of money, but decent enough money. It would clear worldwide $60 million.
Oh, not bad.
So you talk about turning around that like Saw profit, you know, how they put in like, it was like 800 grand and it made like 80 million at the same deal. So they made it for next to nothing and they took a lot of shortcuts. So let me give you a little synopsis in case you're not familiar with Dr. No. Okay, James Bond is sent to Jamaica to investigate the disappearance of a fellow British agent. The trail leads him to the underground base of Dr. No, who is plotting to disrupt an early American space launch with a radio beam weapon. Doesn't sound too interesting when you read it out loud, but thank God the movie makes up for it.
That's because they don't mention all the fun stuff like the Bond girls or the dragon. Or the blind guys from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, the three blind mice. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, they get a song and everything.
Three blind mice in a row. Three blind mice, there they go. Marching down the street, single file. To a calypso beat all the while. They're looking for the cat. The cat that swallowed the rat. They want to show that cat the attitude of three blind mice.
So, this would be the first production from Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli. And their partnership would last many, many Bond films. They worked pretty close with Ian Fleming on these movies, which was really cool. You know, Ian Fleming being the author of the James Bond novels. A lot of cool things, a lot of cool factoids in this movie. Let me give you a little tidbit of fact here. This is the first film that introduced the criminal organization Spectre, which would appear in six more films before they would go nameless until the Daniel Craig movie Spectre, in which the name would be brought back. Fun little tidbit for you.
Well, that's because he basically took down Spectre, even though the end was anticlimactic, to say the least.
Yeah, it was climactic.
It was the opening act. It should have been a whole film. It shouldn't have been the opening act before the theme. Nothing.
That was a Roger Moore film. We're not talking about Roger Moore.
Well, hey, what Connery started, he finished. Just saying.
Yeah, he dropped him into a smokestack. Yeah, how climactic was that? You build up six films, six films to get to that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I was my only. I had to mention it. It was just I always thought that was so like really like we could have did better than that. And fun little bonus fact for you, Dr. No of all the Bonds is still one of my favorites. As old as it is, I still really like Dr. No.
Yeah, you know what I didn't realize until recently was that he was a Chinese German. Like he was like you know a mix.
I never mentioned that in the film.
No, apparently that was a novel thing. But yeah, he's a Chinese German. I never knew.
And so, he has no hands.
Yeah. Yeah. They were burnt off in a schmouting accident. he lost it due to radiation exposure, wasn't it? Working on the beam weapon?
I think so. I think he lost it in one of those little, you know, where you put your hands in the gloves. Wasn't it something like that? That's why he lost his hands.
Yeah, I think his hand. Yeah, they had to take his arms. Yeah. So, do you know what Spectre actually stands for?
No, I know it's a. I can't think of the word currently. Each letter means something, but I don't remember what it stood for.
It stands for Special Executive for Counterintelligence, Terrorism, Revenge, and Extortion. They couldn't come out with something a little bit better than that.
I mean, I will never remember that.
I mean, it's a really cool name, but like, couldn't you come out with, you know, better terminology, you know, better words for it? You're just throwing a whole bunch of words against the fucking wall to spell Spectre. And you used SP for special. Come on. You got lazy.
Cheated.
Couldn't it be Special Professional Executive for Counterintelligence, Terrorism, Revenge, and Extortion?
Special Personal.
Thought that would have been a little bit better.
They didn't have time. They were kind of like, you know.
So, like I said, this was the first James Bond film. And Broccoli and Saltzman, they actually wanted to do the eighth book, Thunderball, first. But unfortunately, that was in like legal rights hell with a legal dispute Kevin McClory. So Ian Fleming and him were back and forth in jail, and they couldn't come to an agreement. So Thunderball got scrapped, so they said, fuck it, we're doing Dr. No first. So how they went from, you know, Thunderball to, you know, Dr. No, which was the eighth fucking book, I have no idea. It's like, you know, pick one out of the hat. All right, we're doing Dr. No. Uh-huh. Okay.
And luckily, the way Bond works, it makes it easy. You could really go in any order you want and still pretty much make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much all, you know, there's no real chronological order, you know, you really think about it.
No, more or less, it's just like, and this is this week's mission.
Mm. So, this is an episode dedicated to, you know, Sir Sean Connery, you know. But he wasn't actually the first person considered for the Bond role. The actual first person was Patrick McGoohan, and he was in some spy movie called John Drake, or a TV series, Danger Man.
Wasn't that spoof one a little bit before Doctor No?
No, it came after.
Really? Wow, I didn't know. I thought it was actually older.
No, sir. Nope, but McGoohan actually turned down the role, and they actually looked at somebody else, David Niven. I think it was Niven. And he was the one that played James Bond in the one you're talking about, Casino Royale, the spoof movie. They looked at him as playing James Bond. So one of the more iconic moments in all of cinema, not just the James Bond franchise, is when James Bond first introduces himself. He says, Bond, James Bond. He says his name. He says it in such a cool way, and he presents himself. You know, he's smoking a cigarette. You know, he's real ladies' man. You know, that really set the tone for the character. I think that if anybody else would have tried to portray that, it would have fell flat on his face.
Bond. James Bond.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, Connery just had like a suave to him. You know what I mean? And you know, it didn't come naturally. You know how he showed up to his audition?
No.
Looking like a raggedy bum. Like he looked like he just fell out of bed and came to an audition and just spit some lines.
Hey man, it's amazing what makeup and hair can do.
Yeah. Well, they actually trained him up. A couple of the producers took him to like these like high class, high roller, high society places to kind of show him this is how the rich suave live. So he kind of took mental notes and incorporated that into the James Bond character.
Hey, more or less, that's still basically the template.
No, I would say that the template would be Goldfinger for all Bond films. That's my personal opinion.
I meant the way Connery portrayed Bond. Most of them are still pretty much that character. Nobody ever strayed too much from what he started.
Yeah, he really laid the foundation, no doubt about that. But Dr. No, as a villain, did not set the foundation for villains.
If anything, he would have set the inspiration for lackeys. Remember, all the lackeys a lot of them would have like gimmicks. It was kind of funny. He like introduced the gimmick, and then they're like, "All right, the gimmicks, but for the lackeys." Wasn't he one of the very few villains, except for maybe one of the later ones that was that had a gimmick? I think only lackeys did from that point on.
Yeah, because then Jaws would have a gimmick, Mayday would have a gimmick. Yeah, they, I mean, they all, Oddjob had gimmick, yeah.
But they were lackeys until the villain from Die Another Day, no, not Die Another Day, World Is Not Enough.
Oh, yeah.
He had the bullet in his head.
Yeah, he couldn't feel pain, and yeah.
And then the one in, I believe it's Skyfall, I think, the guy had the jaw.
Yeah.
But other than those, for like a long time, none of the other main villains had the gimmick. It was always the sidekick or the lackey.
Yeah.
But I also really liked how Dr. No kind of portrayed himself. And obviously, as far as I can tell, that's who Dr. Evil's based after.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gimmick, the outfits are all very similar. The mannerisms, but obviously parody-wise. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah, Austin Powers was a great parody on the Connery films, especially. I love Austin Powers. Especially the first one. I thought that was the better spoof of them. After that, it got kind of weird with the time travel and all that.
Yeah, they're still fun. But we're getting off topic.
True. But like I was talking about Dr. No. Originally, in the original script, Dr. No was going to be a monkey.
Oh, that's something.
Yeah. This is a fun fact for you. Yeah, originally he was going to be, they were trying to cast a monkey to play Dr. No.
I am very glad they didn't go that way.
Yeah. That would have been completely what the fuck. You got this suave secret agent, and then you got this crazy monkey trying to beam satellites out of space.
I don't know how well that would have did. Like, and it's a monkey. Oh, all right.
Well, you know, I mean, that would have been a wild acid trip. I mean, the drugs were flowing around in the 60s, man.
Well,
free love, man.
Well, it was 60s. You also had, you know, Planet of the Apes being real big and whatnot. Or now, I think that'd be, no, that was after, yeah. So then maybe they were trying to ride that a little, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about Dr. No, I'm thinking about the iconic intro, you know how it's got the, you know, down the barrel of a gun and then you see James Bond turn and then shoot the camera and then the gun falls, right?
Yeah.
That was done by Maurice Binder. He did the first one and then he wouldn't come back and do it again until Thunderball.
You know what's funny? For a long time, I never picked up on the fact that it was the barrel of a gun. I just thought it was like this neat looking little circle thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't until a little later that I was like, oh, it's a gun.
Yeah. And a fun fact for you, it's not even Sean Connery. That turns and shoots the gun. That shoots the guy with the gun.
I could believe that.
It's a stunt double for three movies. Another thing I remember from Dr. No, that stupid tank dragon. They called it the Dragon of Crab Key or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And it was really just a fucking tank with a it's just a tank with a flamethrower.
Yep, and they called it a drag because it only came. They would only use it at night, and it would burn the tree, so it looked like it had a tail.
Yeah, and you know, Coral, he could have gotten out of the way. Come on, man.
Yeah, yes, he could have.
You had more than enough time to move out of the way of that slow ass tank. I'm
you
sorry.
Know what it is, though? I think he was just tired of driving the boat, and he was just kind of like, you know, just let this happen.
Something. He could have gotten out of the way. That was just ridiculous. It's one of the worst deaths in all of Bond. It's almost as bad as the smokestack.
Oh, God, yeah. The smokestack still, I think, the worst because it's just, oh, God. Yeah, I'm not, that's, it's not even Connery. I'm not discussing that smokestack. Never happened in Connery land.
But speaking of smoking, Honey Rider. Now, that was a smoking hot Betty back in the day, my friend.
True.
Pops out of the water with her white bikini and her knife, collecting seashells.
Ursula Anders, right? Or Andress?
That would be correct.
Oh, yes, I got one.
Did you do your homework?
I just for some reason remembered her name. Don't know why.
Hmm.
Wow. I told you I really like Dr. No. It's one of the Bond movies I've seen the most, honestly. I've seen it a lot. I really like Dr. No.
Yeah, I mean, we love it. But when it first came out, it wasn't very it wasn't praised very well at all. You want me to read a couple of review excerpts I found?
They better all been talking about how good that mango tree is.
Time magazine called Bond a quote blithering bounder and a great big hairy marshmallow who almost always manages to seem slightly silly.
I've been called the same thing, so that's a fair comparison.
Fair enough. Stanley Kaufman in The New Republic said that he felt the film never decides whether it is suspense or suspense spoof. He also did not like Connery or the Fleming novels. So he kind of Roger Ebert-ed that shit. Like, I don't like this genre, but I have to review it. So fuck you.
I think those kind of critics should be just discounted, right? They should never have been hired for that job to begin with. Yeah, I don't really like this guy or his work. Oh, well, I guess we'll send you to go review his movie. It's impossible. You're not going to give a fair review.
Well, here's another one, another review that came out about the film. And this one comes from the fucking Vatican.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They condemned Dr. No, describing it as, and I quote, a dangerous mixture of violence, vulgarity, sadism, and sex.
Okay. Getting a little afraid. I need an old priest and a young priest. The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you. Whoa, hello. Okay. Sick as a dog now. Okay. Gonna vom.
That would have the reverse effect on me. If the Vatican, the holiest of holies, say don't go see this film because it has sex and sadism, I'm going to go fucking see it.
If I found a PG movie with that kind of rumble, that's looking pretty all right. I'm there.
The Kremlin even said that Bond was the personification of capitalist evil. Both controversies helped increase public awareness of the film and greater cinema attendance. So they hear these negative things about this film. Oh, it's got fucking sex and all this violence. And it's like more or less promoting the film. You're pushing people into the fucking theaters. Fucking numpties.
Pretty much. It's actually funny to think, when you watch Dr. No or really any of the early Bonds, and they're great films and whatnot, but to think of a Bond movie, like especially early on, like, it's overly violent. I mean...
Well, I mean, he does slap some bitches. I ain't gonna lie, and I'm pretty sure he raped one. I'm pretty sure that was not voluntary sex. I can't remember which one it was.
I kind of think the girl from Goldfinger.
Which one?
What was it? Was it Pussy Galore?
Yeah, but in the novel, she's actually a lesbian. She actually after Bond, she's like, I'm pretty much done with men. And then
once you've had the best, where do you go?
Not to the rest, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, you're like, there's nothing left for me now but disappointment. I've climbed Everest. Time to try a whole new mountain, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I got one more review. This comes from Leonard Mosley in the Daily Express. Now, this guy actually has a positive review. Dr. No is fun all the way, and even the sex is harmless. I don't know how the sex is harmless, sure, but...
I think from the 60s, he was kind of pointing out that, like, it's there, but it's not, it really isn't vulgar. You don't see nothing, it fades away. Like, you can tell that it's there and you know what's going on, but most of it's implied. I definitely think his review's fair. Yeah, that's Bond. It's just always meant to be fun, enjoy yourself. Get the hell out of here.
And you also got to remember where Bond started. It started as a fucking article or a sub-column in Playboy. You know what I mean? I don't think it was ever meant to be taken seriously. I'm pretty sure Ian Fleming never started with the intention of, I'm going to make this a literary work. He's like, I'm just writing the Playboy. Whatever. I'm having fun.
I mean, that's basically the early character is almost the personification of, the Playboy-type characters from the 60s. Mm-hmm. That's all that was that suave, ladies' man kind of shit.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing like Bond out at the time. So, he's a Renaissance man. And that's why he got 24 films total now. Well, 26 if you count the Casino Royale parody and Never Say Never Again. So, if you count those, 26. Officially, 24. So, all right, let's move on from Dr. No, as fun as it is, Three Blind Mice and all. We are going to go to Russia. We are going to go From Russia with Love.
from Russia with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you.
It was released October 11th, 1963. And it was, again, directed by Terrence Young, who did Dr. No. It had a budget of $2 million, and it made how much, Sean?
Let's go with $100 million.
It did not clear $100 million, although it did surpass Dr. No with $79 million.
Really wanted to make $100 million.
Yeah. There are Bond films that have... older Bond films that cleared 100, but we'll get to them. So it had a double the budget, but it didn't double the revenue. So let me give you a little synopsis, or synopsis if you're an asshole. Well, he goes to Russia and finds love.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. End of movie. Roll credits.
It was short and sweet, and you know, for being a 5-minute movie and to make $79 million. I thought it was very nice, you know, it was quick, in and out.
No. So, essentially, an assassin's trying to kill 007 to get revenge for killing Dr. No. And he goes to Russia to meet up with a Russian special agent and to get electrocryptographic device with Russian secrets. And it just becomes a cat and mouse game between Donald Grant, or they call him Red. It was Robert Shaw in the movie. You remember Robert Shaw, Sean?
No. I remember the hitman, but I don't remember the actor.
From Jaws.
Oh. Huh.
He was the boat captain.
Oh, yeah.
Except he was shaved up and clean looking.
Yeah, I always forget. And then I remember looking into it. And every time I look up that guy, like, I wonder what else. Oh, yeah. It's like an oh, my God thing every time. Also, I think the assassin was sent by Spectre.
Yes, they were sent by Spectre to avenge Dr. No. So they hired, you know, Robert Shaw, or sorry, Donald Grant, to go and kill 007.
And if I remember right, the movie starts off with him actually proving he can kill a guy wearing 007's face mask.
Yes, and he killed him in 1 minute, 52 seconds, just so we're clear. And he killed him with garrote wire concealed in his wristwatch.
See, he had the potential to do it. But as they made other films, I'm going to go ahead and assume he doesn't do it in this film.
Yeah. I thought this one had one of the hotter Bond girls, though. The Titania Romanova. I loved Daniela Bianchi.
If only she had names that were easier to pronounce.
Yeah, I know. Why couldn't they? You know what was funny, though, is that they would hire these good-looking broads, but they would have someone else redub them. Like, because if their accent was too thick or something like that, and they couldn't really understand too much, they would redub them.
I love the little 60s term you use, good-looking broads.
Hey, man, I'm in my time machine, man.
Yeah, keep it classy, sir. Keep it classy.
So anyway, Agent Romanova is a good-looking dame.
not as good-looking as Romanoff, but, yeah, you take what you can get.
Yeah. So she's pretty much screwed over by her boss who works for Spectre. And I want to say that her boss was number...
I think she was 4.
No, she was 3. She was number 3.
Was she 3?
Yeah, she was 3.
And she recruits her by telling her that she still works for the... Because she didn't... The spy girl didn't know that she... That the Spectre agent didn't work for the government anymore. So she thought she was following orders.
Yeah. And number 5 was the...
The guy.
The chess guy. He was the one making all the moves. He was number 5. It's hard, because this is the first movie where they actually introduced the number system for the agents. You know how Blofeld is number 1, and then there's number 2, 3, 4, 5, and they all have numbers. This was the first time you actually heard about it. So,
obviously in Dr. No, you don't see anybody but him. So I don't think it was till towards the end you find out that there's, you know, an organization.
Yeah. What you know what always baffled me about this movie? is that Grant was hired to kill Bond, but he ended up keeping him alive most of the movie. Almost like a guardian angel type, but just, I guess he was trying to savor the kill. Well, I know he had to wait for the Lecter. He had to wait to get that little device so he could kill him and steal it off him.
But that was part of it.
But he kept him alive like three or four times in the whole movie.
Yeah, until basically, obviously, the end when they have their showdown. But he even tells him, he's like, yeah, couldn't let you get killed. Had to get that Lecter.
Yeah.
This.
You know what else confused? You know what? Real quick. You know what else confused me about Grant is like he was gonna blackmail Bond with that sex tape. Remember when him and Romanova were getting it on, and he was like recording it. Who was that for? I mean, Pornhub wasn't a thing then. Who are you gonna show this to?
Well, Spectre was highly advanced.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it was called Porn Circuit back in the day.
Oh, Porn Circuit City. Okay.
Yeah.
But that I mean, nice. Just thinking, like, who the fuck? They're secret agent. Well, Bond is a secret agent. Who are you going to embarrass? He doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, and
you're gonna show it to his dead wife that he hasn't married yet until two movies later or three movies later.
Send it to MI6, who already knows what he does for country.
Oh, yeah. Especially Miss Moneypenny.
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to show it to. Yeah. And you know, the thing I found, because I've watched this one recently, the thing I found a little weird about From Russia With Love is, man, the girl in this one, they all like Bond. They're all, like, really in, but she really, really wanted the 00, man. Good
Lord.
Yeah,
she fell in love with him just by looking at his picture.
Pretty much. I mean,
think about it. That was a precursor to how Plenty of Fish would work.
Yeah. See? Ahead of its time. I mean, and she fell so hard.
She fell so hard, she fucking betrayed her whole country for him.
Hey, man, there's a reason people like Bond. Apparently, he has the whole package.
I just don't understand the whole blackmail with the sex tape thing. It's just why?
Especially being that other than the end for like a quick, like almost laugh, it serves no function in the movie.
Yeah. So before we started recording, we were talking about some of our favorite Bond themes, right? And From Russia With Love has an iconic one. And for years and years and years and years and years since I was a kid, I always thought it was Frank Sinatra that sang that song. Sean did as well.
As did I. I will admit that one to our audience. Until about a half an hour ago, I thought that.
Yep. It's actually sung by Matt Monro, who sounds identical to Frank Sinatra.
At least to peasants like us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nancy Sinatra would go on to do another Bond theme because Frank turned it down. Just a little future fun fact for you.
Yeah, well, what theme?
You Only Live Twice.
Oh, I like that one. Well, I mean, I like all of them, honestly. Of the 24 films, there's maybe three I don't care for. I'd say that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, that's a good percentage. A little fun fact about From Russia With Love. It is the last film that President Kennedy saw before he died.
Not a bad way to go, man.
Yeah.
That's the last film. Well, sadly, I leave this world, I can guarantee you my last film won't be something so sweet.
No, you'll probably be like, I'm going to watch Jackhammer Massacre, go across the street, get a pizza, and die.
Probably, yeah.
So, but yeah, this is the last film that President Kennedy watched. And funny enough, it was one of his favorite books. So there you go.
That is a pretty sweet little fact.
Mm-hmm. So From Russia With Love's pacing was a little off for me. It's still my favorite Bond, but the pacing of it was just a little off for me.
It actually is. It's because it kind of starts with the whole killing number. Then it slows down to get the plot, and then it's kind of like pretty steady to the gypsy fight, and it picks up a little bit. Then it slows back down again, and then everything kind of happens. Then it picks up again, and then it slows down on the train until the fight, and then it does have some weird stop and go pacing, which luckily for at least for me anyway, I'm interested enough in the film that I'm fine with it. But it does take its time, and the pace is very stop and go. It doesn't have the most fluid pace.
No, not at all. But overall, I think it's still the best Bond between tone and writing. I really enjoyed it. Scenery wise, like different filming locations, which Bond is notorious for, they kind of stepped away from the whole Caribbean thing for a second and went to Istanbul, and you know, they went on the Orient Express, and
that's actually my favorite thing about Bond. I always liked the globe trotting. I always thought it was cool to see these locations that people like me don't ever get to see.
Yeah,
that was one of the things that, especially younger, it's one of the things I really liked about the franchise. Was just I always thought it was cool to see all these different countries, because I'm pretty sure he's hit damn near all of them, at least all the big ones.
A lot of the Bond films were actually filmed on location. You know, when they were in Jamaica and they were in the Caribbean and all that, they were actually there. So,
well, that's easy. Ian Fleming had a thing for Jamaica, from what I remember.
He lived in Jamaica.
Yeah. Yeah, he liked it. He liked it a lot.
His Ian Fleming's house in Jamaica was named Goldeneye.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew that. So he loved the place.
Yeah, can't really blame him. Never been to Jamaica, but it looks pretty.
I'm sure it's nice, especially you know when you're wealthy. Huh? I'm sure it's pretty all right.
All right, so let's move on from Russia with love, and we're gonna go to Goldfinger.
Goldfinger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch. Such a cold finger.
Which was released on September 18th, 1964, and we have a change of directors here. We have a guy named Guy Hamilton. He's no stranger to the Bond franchise. He's done a couple, so not just this one. It had a budget of $3 million. How much did it make, Sean?
Did this one make $100 million?
This one cleared $100 million.
Yes.
It made $125 million.
And this one, I believe, is my favorite Connery film for the Bonds.
Is it your favorite overall Bond?
No, it's not. But it is one I it definitely would be top five easy. Easy up there, because I find it impossible to have a favorite Bond film. I've never been able to pick one. But I have a favorite Bond film per Bond, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a favorite Connery, a favorite Moore, you know, all of them. And this one was my favorite one for him. I think this was just... I mean, they were the previous two before this were obviously great, and I liked them a lot. But this one was definitely my favorite for his. It's very iconic, very quotable. You had the villain, and it all came together really, really great. And yeah. I thought this one actually had probably the better pacing of the first three, because this one it's pretty go. Like there isn't really much, you know, kind of unevenness. It's got a really good pace to it.
Yeah, and this film also had Shirley Eaton, who was the Jill Masterson. She was like probably one of the finest Bond girls. Good God Almighty! So let me give you all
know how to pick them.
It's true. So let's do a little synopsis here. This one has Bond investigating gold smuggling by gold magnet Ulrich Goldfinger, and eventually uncovering Goldfinger's plans to contaminate the United States bullion depository at Fort Knox.
Yeah, eventually. Because they find that out to the end of the film.
You know, as many times as I've seen the film, I always thought he was trying to steal the gold.
No, you don't find it out till toward the end. He's like, he does the math. He's like, you know, I'm good with numbers. And then Connery breaks it down for him.
It's like, it would take him like 14 days to get all the gold out of there or something like that.
It was like 14 days with 600 trucks. And he's like, I'm not going to steal it. He's just going to irradiate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where Bond does that whole, you know, damn. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he replies to. Like, oh, damn, that sucks.
True. And this is actually the first time Bond is in America. You know, he's been all over the world, but we have yet to see him in America. He's actually at Miami Beach on vacation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he does the... he catches the girl who was cheating for Goldfinger.
Yeah, he was reading the card.
Yeah, and then he made him lose.
Were they playing bridge or were they playing rummy?
I want to say they're playing rummy, but I don't remember. But unfortunately, the girl that would help him,
it was Jill Masterson.
Yeah, she doesn't make it too well. Things don't end up well for her.
No, she dies. She's painted gold and dies of skin suffocation, which I didn't know was a real thing. That's actually a medical thing.
Yeah, it's real. I don't know if, like, in the movie he explains that they'd leave a patch bare to help the skin breathe. That was a real thing, but it did happen to dancers and stuff who would do the full body makeup stuff.
True. But we would also get her twin sister, Tilly. So you got Tilly and Jill. So you got Till and Jill. She tries to assassinate Goldfinger, fails twice, right? She tries to kill him twice.
I think so. Man, I feel bad for not knowing that. I should know some of these details, but I'm not perfect.
So we have Shirley Eaton, who is playing two characters, Jill and Tilly. Okay. And then she dies as both characters. Oddjob hits her in the head with his hat, and that's it.
One might even say that was an odd job.
True. So technically we had three Bond girls in this film.
Technically.
I consider a Bond girl anybody that helps Bond. So it doesn't have to be one specific, like, main Bond girl, but he can have many. So she played two characters. They both die. Okay. So the third one would be Pussy Galore, who is Honor Blackman. I don't know why that name always... It's such an odd name, it always sticks out in my head. and I always remember the line, man. It's like, James is like, "Who are you?" And Pussy says, "My name is Pussy Galore. I must be dreaming."
Mm-hmm.
Fleming was a little bit of a perv with these names, but it worked. I loved it.
Yeah, and the fact that everybody's able to deliver that name with dead seriousness, I wonder how many takes it took.
So to give a little bit of trivia, the reason that Terrence didn't come back to direct this one is because of a pay dispute, and he wanted to go do something else. So that's the only reason he didn't come back.
That's a very common thing. And, directors are just like, "Yeah, I just did two, and he almost did them back to back." So I could see that.
So this film was an over-excess, man, or a success. The man was so high for this film in New York that a theater had to stay it was called the Mill Cinema in New York. It had to stay open 24 hours a day to meet customer demand.
I could see it. I mean, it easily was the best film of whatever year it came out. What was it, 68?
No.
64. 64. Was it so much? Wow.
Yeah.
So it was a year after Russia?
Yeah. They were cranking them out at this point.
Oh, man. Glorious times to be alive for sure. But
I wish I could look forward to a Bond film every year. Now I got Daniel Craig.
Who I don't mind, but even at that, it's once every 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, this one was, I really liked it. Even the golf was kind of fun. The golf scene when he drops, he gets this prop to lower Goldfinger in because he's going undercover to investigate it. And he's like, "Let's play golf. What are you going to wager?" And he just drops this damn gold brick.
Yeah, that Nazi gold that he just dropped.
Yeah, and he just drops on the ground like, boop. And I just thought, like, that was always funny to me because I'm like, okay, Goldfinger ain't stupid. Nobody just walks around with a big ass gold brick with them, except maybe Sam Jackson. But other than him, nobody's got a big gold brick. "Oh, you want to wager something?" "Yeah, oof, my lucky golden brick."
Well, another fun trivia fact. I'll give you another one. The comptroller of Fort Knox sent a letter to the production team complimenting them on their imaginative depiction of the vault. United Artists even had irate letters from people wondering, how could a British film unit be allowed inside Fort Knox? Adam recalled, in the end, I was pleased that I wasn't allowed into Fort Knox because it allowed me to do whatever I wanted. In fact, the set was deemed so realistic that Pinewood Studios had to post a 24-hour guard to keep the gold bar props from being stolen.
That's pretty funny.
So they couldn't get inside. They tried because Ian Fleming had friends in the military. And he tried to get into Fort Knox, maybe not to film, but just to see inside to get an idea what it looked like in there. And so the production team just had to kind of use their imagination. So
I thought they did a great job. I honestly, the way they show Fort Knox is kind of what I always assumed the inside would look like.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting.
And the flyby that they did over Fort Knox, they weren't supposed to go below 3,000 feet, but the director called an audible on that one and said, drop the 500 because the shot looked like shit. He's like, you can't even really tell at 3,000 feet that the plane's, you know, dropping gas or whatever. But he said, drop the 500 feet. Oh, they caught hell for that.
I think it was worth it.
Yeah. That's
pretty good. You know, it's sort of a big part of the film. So if you couldn't see the building, it would lose the effect.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, a little side note for this one. Mm. And I don't know anything about gases or how they work. Well, I mean, I got an idea how they work, but I don't know the duration. But I always thought it's outright silly that when that gas hits, they drop immediately. And when the gas is cleared, you notice everybody revives immediately. There's no groggy. There's no in the middle. They're just 0 to 100. It's always so funny to watch.
I think you missed that, buddy.
But
she never had gas in there.
When they knocked them out?
They faked it so that Goldfinger would go in, and that way they'd have them trapped.
Yeah, the other, when they're invading the soldiers, when they're knocking them out to go into Fort Knox, all the people guarding the place.
Yeah.
They gassed them.
Yeah, this was after that James gave Pussy the D. That's great.
You know what? Yeah,
he talked her into it to not drop the actual nerve gas.
They're all terrible actors. Then
they all fake it, and then Goldfinger goes in, and then they have him trapped.
You're right. But they're still terrible actors. They are all terrible.
They're soldiers, man. They're not real deals.
They could have did better.
And it's the same group of soldiers. By the way, it's all the same actors. They just get up and move to another spot.
Well, you know what? I demand better from my soldiers. If they can't fake being knocked out, then we knock them out for real.
So with the success of Goldfinger, it actually pushed sales in the Ian Fleming novel section.
I could believe that. It's the same way the MCU movies push comic sales.
True. Yeah. This could probably be considered the foundation or the template for that.
I mean, in a way, it kind of was. You had a whole bunch of individual films, and there's a little small bit that connects them. So, you know, sort of similar.
So, yeah, so Ian Fleming caught a hell of a paycheck for this. In 1964, 6 million Bond books were sold in the United Kingdom, including 964,000 copies of Goldfinger alone.
And that's on top of, you know, the bank he made for the movie.
So between the years of 1962, which was Dr. No, and 67, which was Goldfinger, a total of, you want to guess how many books he sold total of Bond novels?
I have no clue what a good number of books is.
Okay, I have the roundabout number here. 22,792,000.
Wow.
In five years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's how you can afford GoldenEye in Jamaica, I guess.
Well, did he have? Yeah, but he had that. I think he had that before he even started filming, right?
Yeah,
he'd already made a lot of these books before the movie went into production, or all of them.
Yeah, they were pretty successful. But when the movie came out, it's just like the comic thing, like you said, just exploded.
Good times to be him.
He lived a pretty good life, man.
Yeah, I think he did. I don't think he knew too many sad days.
Not that I could tell. Well, that was until they did Thunderball in theaters. When they put Thunderball out, he was probably like, oh.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he was able to lull himself to sleep with his millions and millions of dollars.
I would. I'd be like that scene in Dumb and Dumber where they're blowing their nose with $100 bills.
That's what I hope to be someday, is you know, as soon as we get the listeners up a little bit. So spread the word.
So let's go to Thunderball.
If we must.
He acts while other men just talk. He looks at this world and wants it all. So he strikes like thunderbolt.
We're going to talk about Thunderball. It's a Connery film, but it's got to happen.
We just left the sweet golden age of Bond, and this is the first time we dipped down a little.
In some people's eyes. Actually, some people really enjoy Thunderball. We took that poll on Twitter, and some people actually voted for Thunderball.
I pick on it, but, you know, we all got our own taste, and if you enjoy it, you know, more power to you. It's really not one of my favorite Connerys. It might even be my least favorite, but I'd have to think about it. But, yeah, it was still, I still like the film. I still enjoy it, so it's not like I think it's bad or nothing.
It's the whole 25-minute underwater fight scene that kind of drowns you.
Yeah, it
no pun intended.
It really is. It really is. Like I mentioned to you before we started recording this episode, it's... You know, I'm all into the film and, you know, having a good time. And then when that water battle starts, I just can't keep my interest anymore. I kind of, after like 4 or 5 minutes, I'm like, see what's on Facebook.
All right. So let's talk about Thunderball as a whole then.
Yes. When was it released? I'd love to know.
The movie was released on December 21st, 1965.
Man. They really were close together, those first four.
It was directed by Terrence Young, who has come back. He did Dr. No and From Russia. He's come back now. He's done doing his little pay dispute and his little indie film that he wanted to do. And
I'm calling bullshit. He saw those numbers at Goldfinger and was like, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So much, in fact, that they upped the budget to $9 million.
Yeah, that's a hell of a budget for 1964, you said, I believe?
1965.
Yeah,
they would have been filming it in 64, though. But yeah, in 65 it was released.
Still, I mean, that's a hell of a budget.
Well, I mean, $9 million to make it. And the box office draw was $141.2 million.
That's so crazy. And, you know, Bond, not to mention, yeah, everyone's, at least soon would be, the car became almost as big as Bond was. So every car he drove, I'm sure, you know, made them a little money. So I'm sure whoever...
He was driving Aston Martins and later BMWs. And, you know, he's had a bunch of
British cars, obviously.
Not in diamonds. Diamonds, we'll get to that, but it was Ford and diamonds. There's a reason.
But you know what I mean. Most of the time it was a British car, and it was just one of those, like the Austin Martin he drove. It was just, you know, that car, and later on in Skyfall when it pops up, you're like, holy shit, it's the car. And it was just kind of one of those things. So yeah, he had money coming in, and anything that was advertised in it, anything Bond wore, anything he drove, it was just...
Yeah, I remember GoldenEye. They had the GoldenEye wrist watches, like the laser cutting watches. You could actually buy and wear them. I think they're still selling them today.
Probably. If it has a laser in it, I'd buy it.
An actual laser?
Yeah, laser. It has to have a laser and also be a mine.
Proximity mines?
Yeah, exactly. If my watch can't take out somebody sneaking, you know, trying to find me, then what good is it?
All right, let's get back to the film here. So I'll give you a little synopsis of Thunderball. The film follows Bond's mission to find two NATO atomic bombs stolen by Spectre, which hold the world ransom for $100 million in diamonds. Now, $100 million back then, I'm pretty sure was a lot of money. So,
Yeah, it was a lot.
Or is that 100 million euros? I think it's euros. I think it's pounds, 100 million pounds. That's probably a lot more.
I'm still 100 million was still in, you know.
Yeah.
In the 60s, that was a lot no matter where you're from.
It's a lot more than $1 million.
99 more, actually.
All right. So they won 100 million in diamonds in exchange for not destroying an unspecified major city in either the United Kingdom or the United States. Later in the film to be revealed as Miami. So he's going to blow up Miami Beach. You're not taking out America's heartland there, buddy. It's fucking Miami Beach. It's just a cesspool.
We could just make another one, so, you know,
yeah.
Maybe now for the 100 million, we're like, do it.
The search leads Bond to the Bahamas, where he encounters Emilio Largo, the card-playing, eye-patch-wearing Spectre number two.
Number two.
Now, this film finally got made because, like I said, Kevin McClory, him and Fleming were having, you know, that legal battle I mentioned earlier. Well, they settled it as long as McClory could get a little bit of that bank. And he was named producer of the film, while Broccoli and would go on to be executive producers. So, take that as you will. That's just somebody waving their dick around. You know, Broccoli and Salzman were like producers on the first couple films. But then this guy's like, nah, this is my, you know, I co-wrote this script. This is all me. Ian Fleming ripped me off. I want money for this. So this is just him waving his dick around like a fucking flag.
He just wanted money. That's all.
Yeah, and he would double dip because then he would go and make Never Say Never Again. So he'd make the same fucking movie twice.
Well, that's because it was the only movie that, because of the rights with him, it was the only movie that any other studio was allowed to make. Never Say Never is not a United Artists or MGM film like the other ones are. It's actually Warner Brothers.
Yeah. I don't know. He was executive producer of Never Say Never Again, so he moved on up.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's all that. Like I said, it's just a remake of Thunderball, so.
Indeed.
The Thunderball has the better name. I will give it. Thunderball sounds cooler than Never Say Never Again.
This one had I liked the Bond girl in this one. It was Domino. I thought that was just a really cool name for a Bond girl.
Also a superhero.
Yeah, that's true. Later
on. Yeah, it is cool. Domino.
Well, her actual name was Dominita Patici. Patachi or something.
Yeah,
or Durval, depending on if you go by the book or the movie. Because in the book, it's one thing, and the movie, it's another thing.
And that's why you just went with, you know what? Domino's fine.
Yeah, Domino is great for both. Thank you. So, Guy Hamilton, they actually wanted him to come back and direct this one. But he said that he was worn out and creatively drained from doing Goldfinger. I think he gave some bullshit excuse, but so they got the old director back and he's like, I need money, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah, it worked. Mostly. Yeah.
So Thunderball.
Oh wait, that's also the one I think it's Thunderball. Was Thunderball the one that had the jetpack? They saw the guy demoing it, the real-life jetpack?
Yes,
so
it was
put
real.
In the movie.
Actually, a lot of things in this movie were real. That'll blow your mind. All the shark shit, real.
Yeah, I knew that. I actually did know that. When they opened the thing and his reaction to the shark is legitimate because he was just kind of like, whoa.
The ejector seats in the Aston Martin, real.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah. So I'm thinking when that guy got ejected out of that car, I'm thinking he really went flying. Maybe it wasn't a guy. Might have been a dummy, but still it went flying. It was a real ejector seat.
That's pretty awesome.
Emilio Largo's boat, that was real. They actually took two engines. They took one engine out of a boat and combined it with another. So the boat had two different engines to make that boat go like really fast, because they didn't have a boat that size that could move that fast, so they had to construct a boat like that.
So, oh, wow.
So that boat was real.
And while he's looking up more facts, I will tell you, I'm not underestimating when I say this. It really does have a 30-minute underwater battle. It's really long, and it's just a whole bunch of scuba guys attacking each other. And it sounded cool on paper, I like to believe. It's like, yeah, we've got this whole big freaking underwater battle, and it's going to be really sweet. And, you know, it's just not. Because for the most part, you really can't look cool scuba diving. It just doesn't. You can't. I mean, you could leave the water cool and maybe, you know, look cool entering the water, like a backflip or something. But when you're actually scuba diving, guns or no, it doesn't look cool. Sorry.
Yeah, I think they sped up some of them scenes too to make it like go a little bit faster.
I hope so, because, I mean, it's not a very quick scene as it is, and good Lord, just, it couldn't have been great to film that, I'd imagine. You know, you're underwater, and you got to, coordinate all this stuff. I imagine it was probably just a headache.
Yeah, some of it was actually done in the pool of the villa that they rented. They had a saltwater pool, and that's, remember the sharks that were in there?
Yeah.
Okay, so those were real sharks, and there was a scene where Sean Connery came close to being bitten. They had plexiglass in the pool because Sean Connery said, I got a bad feeling about working with these sharks. Can we do something about this? So they put a thing of plexiglass up. Well, the plexiglass wasn't fully secured on one side and a shark got through. And you never saw Sean Connery move so fast.
Yeah, I think I'd have did the same thing.
Yeah. Somebody said he never got out of a pool faster in his life. He was walking on water.
Wow. I absolutely believe that.
Another fun fact. When they blow up Largo's yacht, there's a good one. They were using experimental rocket fuel to blow the boat up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was rocket fuel. It was experimental rocket fuel. And they doused the entire yacht with it.
Oh.
Then they took cover and detonated the boat. The result was a massive explosion that shattered windows along Bay Street in Nassau, roughly 30 miles away.
Oh, awesome.
The guy that did it, John Steers. He would win an Academy Award for his work on Thunderball just for blowing up a boat.
Nice.
Yeah, for special effects. So, yeah.
Is it really a special effect, though, when you legitimately douse a boat rocket fuel and blow it the hell up?
Experimental rocket fuel at that. And it was felt, yeah. And it shattered windows 30 miles away. That's fucking crazy. That's like the equivalent of like a train colliding. Like,
that's a little beyond special effects. You just blew up a yacht. But
well, I don't think they told him. I don't think they told him to use a little bit.
I mean, I wouldn't have.
No, we're getting it. That boat was probably blown into oblivion.
Oh, I would have liked to seen that.
And
live, obviously, in the film, I see it.
So another fun fact about this, in the opening sequence, you know, like we've talked about with the gun, and then he turns and shoots, right? Well,
yeah.
In this one, they changed it up a bit. It's really down the barrel of a real gun.
Huh.
And this is the first time that Sean Connery is actually the one that turns and shoots. It's not his stunt double anymore. It's actually Sean Connery.
Oh, there you go. Something fun for this one.
And, I'm sure. And the stuntman's name was Bob. It was Bob Simmons. Just so we're clear on that.
I'm thinking the audience is going to pick up that neither one of us watched this one. This has been all facts, and we don't really have much to say on Thunderball.
There's plenty to say on Thunderball. They do underwater stuff, and Domino is hot, and Domino is cool. And yeah.
This film was okay.
It was decent. Yeah, I know we said we would do an in-depth dive, but you know what? I got a pussyfoot around some of this shit because Thunderball, not that great.
No, each all the Bond movies are pretty good, okay? So even Thunderball, which is, you know, one of the weaker Bonds, it's still a good movie in its right. It's still, it's fine, but it's, you know, if you're not marathoning, Thunderball gets stepped over by most.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least by me. I tend to pass on this one a good bit.
Like, and I'm a big, I love sharks, right? And this one had a lot of sharks in it, which I thought was cool, but then they overused it. Like, too much shark was a bad thing.
For a Bond flick, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you want plenty of shark. And 007, no, not so much. You don't really need that much shark, honestly.
Yeah. Thunderball was fine. I mean, I got nothing good or bad. Well, I mean, I got good and bad to say about it, but like...
It was fine. It was. I'd say it's a solid
it's not 7. It's not going to change how you feel about it, whether I say good or bad things about it. It's fucking Thunderball. Okay?
Yeah, basically.
Thunderball.
So good they made it twice.
That's right. You only live twice, my ass. All right. So I got two more fun facts about Thunderball because the plot's not that good. Okay. I got to fill it with fucking facts, fun facts. Okay. All right. So last two facts. Johnny Cash actually submitted a song to be used for the Thunderball theme, but it never got used. And it was called Thunderball, by the way.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that would have been awesome, right?
I would have given something more entertaining to Thunderball than that.
Yeah, James Bond, he rules the town.
I mean, that would have been, it would have definitely been catchy. I would have liked to hear him do one.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it. Maybe they'll release it one day.
Maybe. I mean, he's not around anymore to say no, so.
Yeah, but his daughter deals with his accounts and all that, so maybe
Hey, man, never say never.
Ah, bastard, I love you. All right, so one more fun fact, and that's another to deal with the theme. Tom Jones, when he was hitting that last Thunderball that you hear in the theme, just know this, that when the next time you listen to that song, he passed out and fainted.
Wow.
He hit that note, and he says all he remembers is that he opened his eyes and the room was spinning.
That's awesome. At least you know you put everything into it.
Oh, he put a hell of a lot into it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew he did one of them. That's awesome.
All right. So let's move on to You Only Live Twice.
And one for your dreams.
I know this is one of your personal favorites.
It actually is. I think I've told you before, it's I am one of the only fans of this movie. If you ever look up Bond films, this is one of the ones that it gets trashed a lot.
It didn't really do a whole lot for me. It has nothing to do with the whole Japanese culture aspect of it and all that. That was cool, but I don't know. So it was released in 1967, June 13th, 1967, and it's got a new director at the helm, okay? So Terrence and other guy, they're out.
Lewis, I think his name was Guy, wasn't it?
I don't remember. Lewis Gilbert is in.
Ooh.
Okay. Now, it had a budget of $10.3 million. You couldn't tell by watching the movie, but it had it.
No, you really can't. And I do love this film. I think it's a lot of fun. To me, this film is the equivalent of when you watch a really fun filler episode of a franchise, of a TV series you really like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't really advance the plot much anywhere, and you don't really need it. But I thought they were at least having a lot of fun with it. You know, plus had a really, you know, one of the better looking Bond chicks.
Oh, your love of the Asian culture, or the Japanese culture is insanely showing today.
If only I can remember her name. It's like Mitsuko, I think?
No, it's Kissy Suzuki, and she's played by Mai Hama.
Hmm.
Man. Or Mai Hama. Mai Hama. Okay. So they had a $10 million budget, okay? And it would go on, yeah, it would go on to make $111.6 million. Not the best Bond overall, but still very good.
Yeah, still made more than your fave.
Different times. It was still building a fan base, just like us. You know, one day we're going to be millionaires, but right now we're broke as fuck. Go on.
That's true.
So, so You Only Live Twice, essentially the screenplay or the screenwriters, they didn't take it like the other movies were taken from Fleming's books. This one, they just pretty much took the name. And about 90% of the plot of the book, they threw out the fucking window and rewrote it into like almost an original Bond story.
Oh, kind of like the Bourne films. They did the same thing. They just keep the names.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, yeah. All right, so this is going to be supposedly, quote-unquote, winky fingers here, bunny fingers. Sean Connery is retiring from the Bond role. Wink, wink, right? Okay. So the Bond girl was...
So just like in the movie, he faked his death?
Yeah, yeah. That's how the movie. That's how the movie opens up. He's faking his death in Hong Kong.
So kind of funny that he faked his retirement and then he would come back. It's kind of funny.
Well, then maybe they should have saved that for the end of the film then.
What are you going to do?
Well, you're going to hire George Lazenby and continue the franchise. Duh.
Nah, he was a placeholder. But getting on to the film.
We'll talk about Lazenby in a future episode. Don't you worry. You're going to get your Lazenby on, buddy.
I hope so.
All right. So mainly what I took away from this film, let me give you a little.
You should read the synopsis for people who may have missed this one.
A synopsis? What are you, an asshole?
I am when it comes to describing this film.
All right, fine. Well, then, in this film, Bond is dispatched to Japan after American and Soviet manned spacecraft disappear mysteriously in orbit. With each nation blaming each other in the midst of the Cold War, Bond travels secretly to a remote Japanese island to find the perpetrators and comes face-to-face with Ernst Stavro Blofeld, the head of Spectre, or Number One, as we like to call him. The film reveals the appearance of Blofeld, who was previously a partially unseen character. Spectre is working for the government of an unnamed Asian power, implied to be the People's Republic of China, to provoke war between the superpowers. So there you go.
And I believe Blofeld was Donald Pleasence in this, right?
Yeah, he was, and he just looked so weird.
He did. It wasn't his best role, but I still like Donald Pleasence, though. And it was kind of cool, but yeah. And honestly, none of the people, I'd say most of the people that would portray the character later on, none of them are really that great, honestly.
Well, like in Diamonds, Blofeld is, you know, white. I mean, so it's not, what was his name?
Donald Pleasence?
Donald Pleasence, yeah. So it wasn't Donald Pleasence again. They probably couldn't afford him because he was off doing Halloween stuff, I guess.
Oh, man. Well, in the Lazenby one, he loses the earlobes, remember? He doesn't have the earlobes because it was a family crest or some crap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, okay. So here's what I took away from this film, okay? And it was a good film, okay? It's not the worst Bond film, okay? In no way, shape, or form. The eyebrows. Can we please talk about Sean Connery's fucking eyebrows? When he gets married to that Japanese girl, what the fuck?
What? It's what they needed. He was undercover.
Okay, this was the equivalent of, and we've talked about this before, was John Wayne as Genghis fucking Khan. Sean Connery with his thick ass Scottish fucking eyebrows, okay, and they're like arched, they're like, I don't fucking know, it's awful.
Yeah, that whole bit was a bit weird. Like I said, to me this was just, it was just fun. Like, there was nothing groundbreaking here.
They forced him to train with ninjas,
dude. Bond and ninjas. I don't care how old I get. You throw ninjas into a film I already like, I like it more. I don't care. I don't care if they belong there or not. I'd have ninjas in every film if it was up to me.
But they accidentally killed his fake wife with the poison.
Yeah, unfortunately. And also, he really liked that one too.
Yeah. Also, this would be the volcano lair. That's where Austin Powers would rip this off from.
Mm-hmm.
Filled with liquid hot magma.
So yeah, there was a lot of, like I said, this one was fun. It was, there's not a whole lot I can really say because, you know, the plot was really meh and there's nothing really that stands out too much, but it was just fun. Like I said, to me, this was like the great filler episode of a show you liked. It was just like, eh, what do we do for this one? Well, we've done a lot of serious-ish stuff for Bond. Let's just do a fun one. Fuck it. Do whatever.
Right. So let me throw a fun fact in. When they wrote this, they forgot to put in Bond girls.
I don't think they forgot. I think they were like, okay, and the film takes place in Japan. Eh, that should be enough eye candy.
Well, that's why they had to create Akai and Helga Brent, because they completely had a lack of Bond girl time, and that's one of the selling points to a male audience. And they're like, well, we don't really want a sausage fest in here. So,
well, plus it's one of the staples. I mean, you got the vodka martini, you got the car, you got the gadgets, you got the girl. It's, you know, it's just one of the things.
Well, apparently the screenwriters for this actually came out and said, yeah, the book is trash. We just want the name. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't fans of the book. I mean.
That's kind of weird. In a weird way, you know, I'm not going to because I can't read books for the life of me. Comics, sure, but not real books. It almost would make me want to read the book more.
I've read Goldfinger from Rush with Love, Thunderball, and what was the other one? Oh, shit, I can't remember the other one I read. But I've read a couple of them, and they're really good. I dig them. They're still actually putting out James Bond books. That one came out last year.
Yeah. I know they're still they still do it. Mm-hmm. I know they're still running. Obviously, it isn't him anymore. He's long dead. But,
oh yeah. Yeah,
but he's, you know, I could get it. He's a pretty versatile character that you could just clank these babies out like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, no doubt. Fun adventure. Where do you want to go this week? Well, I'm thinking about going to Jamaica. I could write a book about, you know, going to Jamaica.
It is, I will say, from my point of view, it's a little sad that none of the comics have ever taken off. And I've only read one or two of them personally, and I wasn't blown away. I'd love to see a legitimate writer, you know, take a whack at it.
Yeah, it'd be cool. You know, get Bond back in the comics. I'd pick that shit up. Why not?
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. And I guess I should say, not legit, I never read, so, you know, not to be unfair to the other guys that wrote it, maybe there's a winner in there, but from what I've read, it's all been borderline just like, eh, that was okay. I've never read a Bond comic where I was like, I wish this was a movie, or give me another. It's always been like, I could see why that's not a monthly.
Yeah. What about James Pond? James Pond Jr. on Nintendo. Remember that? They couldn't use James Bond, so it was called James Pond.
I didn't have time to play it. I was too busy watching James Bond Jr., the animated cartoon series.
They weren't that bad. They weren't the worst in the Nintendo catalog. And they made two of them, so why not? But back to the movie. You Only Live Twice. It had that theme, you know. Nee, 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 nee. Yeah, I'm not going to sing the whole fucking thing.
Basically, every slow moment in the film, that was the go-to.
Yes. They played that. I think we counted one time. They played it like 13 times in the whole fucking movie. Like, oh, there's the theme again. Well, actually, originally they wanted Frank Sinatra to come in and sing You Only Live Twice. He turned it down and recommended his daughter, Nancy Sinatra, to come in and do it. So she did, and there you go. You got Nancy Sinatra singing You Only Live Twice. One of the I thought it was one of the better Bond themes.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the catchy. It was one of the more memorable ones.
Well, Nancy has a soothing voice. I dig Nancy. She did that one song where it's like, you shot me down, bang, bang.
Yeah. I know exactly that.
She did These Boots Are Made for Walking. You know, she did. She had a lot of hits, believe it or not.
You sound like you're advertising for her.
No, she's not a sponsor. Check ain't cleared.
Damn it.
Yeah, but let's see, what else do I remember from this film besides the fucking eyebrows?
Oh, the sad thing is, like, I haven't seen it in a good bit. I would kind of wish I would have watched it, but I didn't make it that far in my Bondathon. But yeah, I just he goes in and they teach him the way of the ninja, and then
which he does not apply in the rest of the film, might I?
No, he doesn't. And then he makes that great comment, and what was it? She's like, "Hey, your chest is bare. Your chest's so hairy." And he's like, "Was it a bird doesn't come home to an empty nest or something like that?" I love it. I don't know. Like I said, I don't. It's been a minute for me, which I'm gonna have to watch this soon now. But this was one of those fun little films of just kind of like I dug it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Goldfinger quality, but it's not the worst. It's no Octopussy. What can I say?
Yeah. It was. Like I said, to me, it's the fun one. If you really want to watch just Bond, just real, a little borderline campy, kind of fuckity, pop this one in. Treat yourself.
Yeah. So after this film, like we said, Sean Connery would quote-unquote retire, and he would take a break, and George Lazenby would come in and do On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which we will talk about in another episode. But Lazenby didn't want to – they wanted to sign him to a 5-movie deal. He said, "Nah, I'm just going to do this one. I'm going to get the paycheck, and I'm out of here." And he did. So they looked for another Bond. But United Artists really wanted Sean Connery to come back. They asked Sean to come back. He said, "No, sorry, can't do it." And so they upped his pay. They pretty much doubled his salary, plus gave him some kind of royalty rights. So let's just say that Sean Connery was making bank when he came back for Diamonds Are Forever.
Which is his last official Bond, right?
Yes, this will be his last official Bond until he would do Never Say Never Again. And then later in 2006, come back for From Russia With Love, the video game, he would reprise his role only in a voiceover role, but he would be James Bond once again.
It was fun. I liked the game.
Yeah, really good game. I dug it. It's kind of what they're doing. Never mind. We'll talk about it later. All right, so we got Diamonds Are Forever here, and now we're in 1971. It's December 17th, 1971.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever.
Guy Hamilton has come back, and he will be directing.
10 years of Bond.
Yep. Well, not yet. That would be 72.
Thus the damn near part.
Yeah. So it has a budget. The budget for this actually dropped. Huh. It's actually down to $7.2 million.
And it's probably just because they didn't need it, really.
No, not really. But did they really need the big budget for Japanese Bond? I think they spent $9 million of it just on them fucking eyebrows.
You know, I think part of the big budget for that one was probably just filming in Japan because they like to film on location.
Let's step back real quick to that movie. They did shoot on location at a lot of different Asian Japanese landmarks. So that was really cool.
That's also probably a lot of the budget.
Yes and no.
Well, let's just say it this way. When you're filming a Bond movie, you're not really letting the tourist in. You're kind of shutting down the area while you're doing it.
Oh, they did. They shut some shit down in this film.
So
let's just say Ian Fleming had some pull. Okay. So this film had a $7.2 million budget and would go on to make $116 million.
Not too bad.
Not a bad cut at all, my friend. All right. So the story of this film is that Bond is impersonating a diamond smuggler to infiltrate a smuggling ring and soon uncovering a plot by his old nemesis, Ernst Stavro Blofeld, to use the diamonds to build a space-based laser weapon. Bond has to battle his nemesis for one last time to stop the smuggling and stall Blofeld's plan of destroying Washington, D.C. and extorting the world with nuclear supremacy. Yeah, so the film, I remember it started off and Bond is going around killing, he's trying to get the Blofeld and he's taking down Spectre one by one by one. And then he finally gets the Blofeld and there were like all these like surgically repaired people that look like Blofeld.
Yeah, that was the whole opening act, I believe, right? Was him just wiping out the clone looking guys?
Yeah. And then he would find the quote unquote real Blofeld and drown him in a mud pit or whatever, a mud bath.
yeah, he kills him right in the beginning. And you're led to believe, all right, well that's that.
I think I would have rather have had that than the fucking smokestack.
I think I would too, because that is so much, was more satisfying than he picks him up by like the back of his chair and he's in like a cast and shit and then drops him in a smoked stack. I did not. Yeah, I wish they would have just drowned him in mud, honestly.
So, would you like to know what Sean Connery earned for this film? I said they doubled his pay?
Yeah.
He was getting $1.25 million to come back as Bond.
That's pretty damn good in 71.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, what, maybe about 11% of the budget was just the Sean Connery salary?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Like I said, it's small by today's standards, but yeah. for 71, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was a record setter back in the day. So they really wanted Sean Connery to come back, and they got him. I guess money talks, bullshit walks.
Nice.
But unfortunately, sadly, this would be the last time that we would see and or hear of Spectre until the movie Spectre would come out with Daniel Craig in 2015.
Yes and no. Well, it's kind of implied that it's them in Quantum.
Right. Like, they didn't say it was Spectre by name, but you got the hint. And it's not just here. It's in other movies as well.
Well, of the Craig ones.
No, I mean of all the Bonds. They're still like an organization. You know what I mean? But like they're not named Spectre.
Yeah, they don't really go into them anymore like that. It becomes more of like individual adventures.
Yeah. I love Spectre. I like the whole numbering system. Everybody had a gimmick.
I thought it was cool that it was the anti, like you had the MI6 was the good guys and these were the bad guys. I thought it was cool that it was like two sides.
Right.
It was a cool little concept. Mm-hmm. I don't remember too much of Diamonds, honestly. Like, I remember the theme pretty well, mm-hmm. but as for the actual movie, it's been too long for me. I don't remember Diamonds that well. It wasn't one of the ones I watched that much anyway. Not for any real reason. It just so happened that I always would do, you know, Dr. No and Goldfinger and From Russia with Love. Oh, I would do all those more so than these later ones.
Right. So you watch the best of the best and then trickled down.
Pretty much. I mean, like every couple of years I'll do a marathon of all of them, but it just so happens I watch these couple more.
Right. So basically it's like, do you remember the two guys, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kid?
Yeah. The weird guys?
Yeah, I thought they were like one of the highlights of this movie because they were just so much fun. Even though they were homicidal fucking killers, they were a lot of fun.
They were so zany. They were kind of over the top for Bond. Like, I know Bond has a few moments that are over the top, but they've always played it pretty straight. But these guys were so, like, almost silly, but great.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Wint. No, thank you, Mr. Kid.
Oh.
And they talked real slow, like, but they were always in a happy mood. I think it's implied that they are either gay or other.
they may well. That would explain why they were so happy.
It's never confirmed that they are in fact together. but it's implied heavily.
In a weird way, in my opinion, that's how you do those characters. Yeah, you can figure it out for your own. The characters don't have to tell you, nor does their, you know, does that really come into play.
Yeah. What I remember most about this film is that it was shot mostly in Vegas.
Because he did casinos.
Yeah, because up until, you know, when I went out to get married a couple years ago and you were there, I had always wanted to go to Vegas. And a main thing of it was not just Vegas Vacation, but this film. I really made me want to go to Vegas. Like, look at all these bright lights. Look at this good time you're having.
You want to see the Strip.
I wanted to see the Strip, and then I saw the Strip, and then I was unimpressed by the Strip, and then I went to the original Strip, and I was very impressed.
I was more impressed by the top for Vegas. I thought the hotel, the very top, the being at like, what was it, like 10,000 feet? No, not 10,000, but 1,000, whatever it is, 1,400 feet. It's really cool.
It's high. It's the stratosphere. It's named
the stratosphere.
It's named that for a reason.
And if you're ever in Vegas, I highly recommend you pay the $5 if you're staying in the hotel and you go to the top. The view there is amazing. I streamed live from that high. You're looking eye to eyes with helicopters. It is really awesome, especially at night.
I did not make it up to the roof when we were there. But so back to Diamonds Are Forever. It wasn't Connery's. It was almost like he phoned it in. To me, like, it's not a bad movie.
Are you saying he did it for like a paycheck?
Kind of feels like it, yeah.
Probably because that's what it was. Like, oh, I really don't want to be Bond. I give you $1 million. Yeah, you know, I could be Bond. Yeah, yeah. I guess I could do that.
Yeah, I guess I got that suit in the closet somewhere. I'll be on set.
And yeah, this one, it was kind of like. It was kind of like the weird opposite of You Only Live Twice, where that one was like the fun filler. This one was just the business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't suck by any means. It wasn't bad. It wasn't nothing like that. It was fine. But it's just okay. You're like, this is just, okay, yeah, this is what we need to be. Say the line, kill the bad guys, do your thing. And that's what it was. It was just basically like your standard. If you ever had like a middle ground for Bond, this is it. Like, it wasn't bad. You're still going to have a good time. You're going to enjoy yourself. But it wasn't a Goldfinger. It wasn't Dr. No. It wasn't from Russia. It wasn't one of the big, you know, awesome ones that really made you go like, yeah, you know, God damn it, I would watch that again. It was just kind of, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this one didn't have my favorite Bond girl in it. I'm just saying. The Tiffany Case. She kind of reminded me of the orphanage director from Annie.
Oh my God.
That's who she like reminds me of. And she just didn't do anything for me. I don't know. Maybe it's a taste thing. I don't know. Maybe she does something for somebody else. I don't know. But to me, I thought she was like, I'm not going to say she was ugly because she wasn't ugly. She just wasn't on par.
She was the very definition of this film. She's right. Average. She was all right.
Yeah, but I think if they would have switched Tiffany Case, she was playing, like, what the shit was her name? It was like something St. John, Jill St. John, right? If they would have switched her with Plenty O'Toole, the girl that played her, oh man, it would have been a great Bond girl because Plenty O'Toole was smoking.
Yep, and named after her father.
And then she got tossed out a window when Tiffany, yeah, when Tiffany came up, threw her out the window into a pool. But there's not very many memorable things from this film.
Other than the two guys, actually, I remember that. And was this the one where he scales up the side of the building in Vegas? He's outside, like,
yeah,
trying to get up.
Yeah, this is where he tries to get into White's penthouse. Yeah,
and then this is where you see his like holdings. You can find all the stuff he owns, kind of like Austin Powers in this one.
I think so. Yeah, when he gets up to White's penthouse and he gets in there, and then you find out that it's Blofeld. It's not really White. So
yeah,
this one really didn't stand out to me too much. Like I'm not gonna shit on it, but
No, I like I said, it's like I said earlier, it's just very, it's the business. It's just standard. It's not bad. It's not bad by any means, but it's just kind of, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of the weaker ones of the Connery ones. It's obvious this was a paycheck for him.
Yeah, and they kind of split screenwriters on this one, which I don't think helped the film either. Well, for all the scenes that were shot in Vegas, the writers were American. Because the British didn't know how to interpret like American life like that. So they gave it to English or American screenwriters. And it just kind of felt like the Vegas stuff was cool. And then the other stuff was just, it had a different vibe to it. I don't know how to explain it. It just felt like two separate films in one film.
Oh, now you know why.
Hmm. Oh, and the Mars, or not the Mars, the moon rover. This is where he drives off in the little machine, his head sticking out of it. You know what
I mean? Oh, yeah, his head's in the little dome thingy.
For the love of God.
That's such a bummer to end our spotlight on.
Yeah, it's like good, great, greater, and let's wind down.
Yeah. Yeah, you go through all the fun, all the good times. They're like, then we'll do a fun one, and then these other two.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, we're done here.
Paycheck film.
You know what it was? You came in strong, finished okay, and got paid. That's the yeah, that kind of was a little bit of a downer.
Yeah, kind of feel like the wind's taken out of your sails right now.
The funny thing is I feel almost the same way about the bomb that got me into the entire franchise, the Brosnan films. That was a very similar thing.
Mm. Which one was that, Goldeneye or?
Yeah, Goldeneye. Mm. Goldeneye was the first Bond film I ever saw. And then you kind of go up, you know, like Goldeneye was good, Tomorrow Never Dies was good, and then it's just kind of like, oh, World of Not Enough is okay, and then there's Die Another Day. It's the same thing. You start good, get better, then
well, at least we can say that the Craigs were ooh.
I mean, I liked Casino. I thought it was an okay start, and then it dips down for Quantum.
Yeah,
picks way up for Skyfall, which was a fucking amazing. That was his gem, and then Spectre, which should have been good. I think they did that a little. That should have been better.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the guy that played Blofeld in that, and they said it really well, but... Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe if this other one ever happens.
Well, when we do our next Bond thing, it's going to be... at least you got Roger Moore to look forward to.
You're damn right we do. He's got some really good ones, and...
That it's got... that it's got Roger Moore in Harlem.
Yeah, let's say a lot of the Bonds walk that rocky road. They got their wins. They got their ups and downs. They all imitate life well.
Yeah, they were a product of their time, no doubt about it. So I think that's going to wrap up the old Sean Connery special. So let's see. What do we got to plug this week? Pulse Podcast Network, which we are affiliated with. We have our own app now available on Android and iOS, so go get yours today. It's not just us, but a bunch of other great shows, not just geek culture, but we got sports. We got wrestling. We got everything that you would possibly need under the sun. We are now 45 podcasts strong in the network, and it is forever growing. Let's see. I guess this podcast has been brought to you by Caffeine. Thank you, Caffeine, for keeping us awake throughout this. Especially when we were talking about Diamonds Are Fucking Forever.
Yeah, which I still kind of hurts a little bit because I feel like I made Thunderball. I feel like we gave Thunderball more credit, and I'm not sure which I'd rather watch.
Yeah. How did that happen? We gave Thunderball more props than we did Diamonds.
Yeah, and I think Diamonds was better. I think it was.
Oh, we're going to have a watch along just to make sure that we're not losing our minds in our old age.
You know what? I think after this, after you post this episode, we need to put a poll up. I need to know. I want the fans to decide what's better, Thunderball or Diamonds.
We did. We put a poll up last week, and I gave, because Twitter only gives you four options. So I put Dr. No, and I put Russia, and I put Goldfinger, and then Other. There was two votes for Thunderball. One for You Only Live Twice, and Goldfinger won with 73% of the vote. So there you go. And it was out of 130-something votes. So
That's too many options. Come on, we're doing a new one. Only these two. There's no wins here. They have to choose between the two.
So you want them to choose between Thunderball and Diamonds Are Forever?
Yeah, that'll be the deciding vote.
Good Lord.
It'll be on them which of the two films was better.
All right. Fine. We'll put that up on the at Gorilla Brain podcast.
And they'll post it on there. We'll post it. We're on Twitter and we're on Instagram.
Yes, we are on Twitter. We are at Gorilla Brain Pod. And I am at 8-Bit Ray on the Twitter machine. So give the old follow to me and my friend here, Mr. Sean, at Born2083. Just click that little follow button and you'll get all of your entertainment needs and anything dealing with the show. Oh, and a quick announcement. We will have a Patreon up soon. So if you're down for that and you want exclusive content, unedited episodes, early releases for episodes, and original episodes that we're only going to have on the Patreon, not on the channel, then you'll be able to get those there. That's coming soon. I'll keep you all updated on the Twitter machine. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's another episode down.
Just send them on home, then. You know, last week we ended with a fuck 'em. What should we end them with this week?
This week we should end them with the 007 that ended the little countdown from Goldfinger, how it ended on 007. That's what we need to post on Instagram after this has been out long enough, just that image.
Oh.
End this episode, when we're all finished, just end it with that sound clip of Bond dying from Goldeneye.
From what? From Goldeneye?
Yeah, from the game where the screen goes red. Yeah, just end it with that. That's done.
Okay, that's how we'll end it then. Good. All right. So until next time, we will catch you all down the line.